Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. The number of police officers has fallen by more than 20,000 across the country since 2013. Overtime for many officers is becoming the norm and makes one wonder if public safety could be in jeopardy in some places. Here in Pennsylvania, state police are down by more than 300 troopers, and the Harrisburg Police Department could have a shortage of police officers soon. Why are there fewer police officers, and what is being done to recruit more, especially minority candidates? Joining us on today's program is Deputy Chief Derek Moody of the Harrisburg City Bureau of Police. Deputy Chief Moody, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
Also joining us is Detective Sergeant Lisa Layden of the Southwestern Regional Police Department in York County. Detective Sergeant Layden, also welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott.
And we'll be joined a little bit later by someone in the Pennsylvania State Police to talk about their recruiting efforts as well. If you have a question or a comment, maybe you have an idea why you think that there are fewer police officers and what can be done to recruit more police officers, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can also leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Deputy Chief Moody, let me start with you, because we do know that the Harrisburg Police Department is down in numbers. Why?
There's a lot of reasons why departments tend to see a decline in their numbers. For Harrisburg, we have quite a few different issues going on with us. Obviously, there's no secret that we were recently in Act 47 in distressed city.
Economically, right.
Correct.
Finances.
We've slowly started to make our exodus out of Act 47. But in the grander scheme or the bigger picture, that plays a role sometimes if you're a person coming into the field and you're doing your homework and, you know, you're looking around at what agencies have to offer, that could be very scary for someone coming
perception-wise.
Correct. And a lot of times that's what we're dealing with for the profession. It is perception. That's our biggest issue. Not to say that we don't cause different issues our own self, but the biggest thing we fight in our profession is perception.
Let me follow up on that about Act 47. You're right. Harrisburg, the city, has come out of it, is coming out of it, still under Act 47. But, okay, perception is one thing, but money is another. Does or has the city's financial problems over the past 20 years, has that impacted what police officers can be paid, how much money goes to the police department?
Yeah, I mean, we work from a budget, obviously, a preset budget, but we don't always have a lot of the opportunities that some of the other outside or suburban agencies may have as far as from a tax base side. That coupled with our size, we are a pretty large department. I mean, we're small considering, you know, some of the other departments in Pennsylvania, like Pittsburgh or Philadelphia. We're very small. But around here at our complement, and our current complement under Act 47 is about 152 officers. We're currently sitting around 135, maybe a little bit more. We have about six officers in the police academy right now, so we don't really count them in our numbers until they get out of there. But we're below our Act 47 complement. When I came on the job back in the early 90s, our numbers were up into 200, you know, very close to 200. So you take that and you factor in our finances now. What we get paid, I think we get paid pretty good, but
what do you get paid? I mean, I'm not asking you personally, but what would a starting officer get paid in the city of Harrisburg?
So in our department, we have what's called a new officer pay, and that's right around about $46,000, $47,000 while you're in the academy. Once you get out of the academy, our salaries tier. And just to keep me on track, I brought my actual one so I didn't goof this up a little bit. Our base salary for like 2019 would be, it's actually $48,367. Once you would complete that phase, you would go into what's called our FTO phase. Once you get out of the academy, your salary increases. It would jump from there to about $51,000. And then after your first year, you're around $54,800. And your following year after probation, you're going to jump to about, you're going to be around $64,000.
Mm-hmm. But there are other reasons, and we will talk about those in just a moment, other reasons that police departments are having some challenges attracting new recruits. Let me turn to Detective Sergeant Lisa Layden of the Southwestern Regional Police Department in York County. Detective Sergeant Layden, Southwestern is one of those suburban districts, probably a lot of rural areas that you do cover. Is Southwestern down in the number of the number of police officers?
Well, yes, because what we do at Southwestern Regional is we take part in a county hiring consortium. And we've been doing that since it formed. The York County Hiring Consortium formed, I believe, about 15 years ago. So we've always pulled our new officers from those lists. And I can tell you what I've personally seen from being involved in that process of the hiring process is a sharp, steady decline, particularly the last couple years. I can tell you when I first came on the job in the late 90s, I remember testing for two departments that tested together, and they were hiring one person, and there were over 350 people there. The last
350 people for one job.
Yes, for one job. And that was in the late 90s, as I said. And I can tell you probably even 6-7 years ago, we didn't even have that many people show up to begin the process for the entire county consortium, which is almost every department in the county is going to hire off that list for a year or two. So, you know, it's been an interest of mine just seeing that steady decline. And I can tell you, I spoke with a York County chief yesterday about this same topic, and he said what we started with just this past year is less people than we even ended with last year. So, you know what I mean? The number of people that you end with that made it through the process, this year we didn't even start with that many people for the hiring consortium in York County. So it's definitely a top concern.
So why? Why? I mean, as I mentioned to Chief Moody, there are a number of reasons, but what are some of the reasons you think that there are fewer people deciding to go into the profession?
Well, I think it's a complex issue. I think it's a lot of things. I think younger people are not as likely to want to do the swing shift holiday type of work, maybe. I think people are more family oriented than they were 20, 30 years ago. I think there's a lot of things going on. I think obviously the image of policing, I think, needs some change. And I think that's made maybe some of the target audience that we're talking about, you know, people in their 20s, maybe not want to be a part of this. And I think some of it is due to, I don't think people really have an accurate perception of what police do on a daily basis. I've read some survey research of criminal justice students and even high school students that are interested in criminal justice. And I don't think there's a really good perception out there about what police do on a daily basis and what the job is really about.
Well, what's their perception?
Well, I think what they see on the media.
Right. TV shows.
Yeah. And obviously there's an overemphasis on, and there are some bad apples in law enforcement, and there's some things that shouldn't happen. But I think the emphasis is on, you know, the dangerous aspects, and the negative things that are going on. So I think our younger generation I think a large part of it is they just don't want to be a part of that.
Well, go ahead. Chief Moody, what were you going
to
say?
Yeah, and I just wanted to touch off what Sarge was talking about. Even in the city, I think a big dynamic of what we see now is, and we're throwing this perception word around, but not to blame any particular, because at the end of the day, we blame ourselves for our own action, but there's been this big push on, you know, the negativity of being a police officer. It's really cast a very dark shadow in the profession. And I think with the social media, the exploding of the social media and the access of so much information, you push the wrong message or you don't understand what you're looking at, and you can take a turn to the bad side, where everyone is focusing in on a couple actions of some bad police officers that we talk about, and they do exist, but then that broad brush is painted across the entire profession. All police officers are corrupt, or all police officers are bad, and you take a bad experience, and then people self-reflect, and they're like, well, you know what? Yeah, I had a bad experience with the police, and I believe even in the city, and this may sound a little goofy here, but without mothers to push the profession, because it starts at home. You know, if you're raised in an environment where they're like, stay away from that. You know, that's bad, or you'll get hurt, or you don't want to do that. You kind of start at a young age to turn that look away. When I was a young kid, all the kids wanted to be policemen or firemen. That was the job. Now you can go and talk to kids now in school, and unless they're very, very young, policing is it's not even in the list, nowhere near the list.
So what you're talking about, that perception that, let's face it, with today's technology, whenever there is an incident that is caught on a cell phone, the video, we see it across the country.
Viral.
And it does go viral. So you're saying that part of the reason that there are fewer people who are pursuing this career is because they see that and they have a negative connotation toward police officers. Something else, though, along those same lines, I have heard people say that they don't want to deal with the scrutiny that they would have to put up with because they are afraid that an incident like that, even if they're acting properly, following their training, let's face it, some of these things that are shown on video, they don't look good. And sometimes a police officer following their training, doing what they're supposed to do, but that a lot of people don't want to face that scrutiny. Sergeant, you've heard that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was thinking right before you said that, is I see the fear of the public scrutiny. Police officers feel like they're being persecuted for, things that other people have done. And I think that raises the level of, suspect of the public. And I think it goes both ways. I think we're living in times now where both the citizens are more suspicious of the police and less trusting, and the police are less trusting. And that's a big problem. If you look at cities that are buying into 21st century policing task force recommendations, it has to start with that trust. And, that trust has really been torn down. And I think, if you get down to the core of it, that's what has to happen. We have to adopt the community policing models. We have to go back to building the trust both ways.
But you both admit, and I think everyone knows this, that just like any other profession, there are those bad apples. Mm-hmm. And some of those bad apples have been caught on video doing things they're not supposed to do. When you are recruiting people to the police academy to become police officers, how do you weed out the bad apples before they even become police officers?
That's where a thorough background comes into. And, understanding that the process, and I have to sit and speak to council, our city council sometimes, about the process. And most people don't see that. They just think, hey, I want to become a police officer. And, it's not the kind of job that I can come in and I can start tomorrow.
It's not like applying at a grocery store or
no.
something like that.
And not to say that there's – not to compare it that way,
no,
but there's
no.
a level of training. It takes about, for us, we say it takes about a year to make a police officer, the basics. By the time you get through the police academies, they're much longer now than when we went to the police academy. Now you figure police academy is what, about 6 months? That's just at the academy. That's just learning the foundation. Then from there, then you go to your home agency. And then that's a process. Our process of field training is about 12 weeks. And so you figure by the time I hire you, to the time I see you on the street, that's at least a year from the time that you're hired till you hit the street. And we lose officers in between that process. And for us, you got to start all over again. You can't just jump in. Now, there are some shortcuts you can take if you hire a guy that's pre-service, that already went to a police academy or was already a police officer somewhere else. But sometimes you tend to, at least for us, we don't prefer that method as much because it's the same old process. You're bringing someone else's bad habits potentially from another agency to your agency, and you don't know them. So it's better to start fresh where you can build them and you can see them. But that weeding out process is very intricate, and we have to follow what's called civil service rules for our department. Some agencies don't have that, but it's very specific as to what qualifies you. We have a drug matrix that if you used this amount of drugs in this amount of time period, you're not hireable. Or if you've committed a crime when you were a juvenile and it falls under a classified crime that makes you not hireable, we follow civil service rules that we're not able to necessarily bend as much. They're very strict.
I want to follow up on that a little bit later. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up a little bit later, well, I say a little bit later, meaning later this week and coming up a little bit later this month on Smart Talk, some of the topics that we're working on is how the media covered the Three Mile Island accident. It's 40 years ago this month. Also coming up tomorrow, water conservation, land conservation. We'll be talking about child abuse a little bit later in the month. We invite you to share your questions in advance by sending us a voice memo or leaving a voicemail. You can see what's coming up at WITF.org/smarttalk. But today we're talking about the shortage of police officers across the country and what's being done to attract more recruits to and good recruits into police departments across the country. Our guest today, Deputy Chief Derek Moody of the Harrisburg City Bureau of Police, Detective Sergeant Lisa Layden of the Southwestern Regional Police Department in York County, and we'll be joined by Lieutenant Robert Bailey of the Pennsylvania State Police in just a moment. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number 1-800-729-7532. We're joined now by Lieutenant Robert Bailey. He's with the Recruitment Services Section of the Pennsylvania State Police. Lieutenant Bailey, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott. How's it going?
I'm doing well. We were talking earlier in my introduction. I mentioned that state police are down by more than 300 troopers at this point. Can you give us an update? How far down are you?
Currently, as of February 16th, we have 341 vacancies. We have a current staffing level just over 4,400 members, and we have an authorized complement of over 4,700.
So
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so you're down 340. So what does that mean when, Pennsylvania State Police is a little bit different than a local police department, but when you're down 340 across the state, what does that mean?
We have to replenish our ranks. This is something that occurred, 25, 30 years ago, not just for the state police, for other law enforcement agencies around the country. There was a hiring push. So a lot of these police officers, a lot of these troopers are retiring. So we have to replenish our ranks. In some ways we're doing that. We have to keep some of our applicants engaged through the hiring process as far as with increased communications, sending out emails, sending out text messages, doing community-oriented forums with specific populations so we can break down that barrier. Our primary focus is to recruit the most qualified applicant with focuses on women and minorities, and that's what we're trying to do within our agency.
And we're going to be talking about that with our other guest here, recruiting women and minorities in just a few minutes. But when the overall question is why? I mean, actually, with the three of you, you're talking about what can we do to recruit new police officers. But you have to look at the reason why. Why do you think the Pennsylvania State Police is down by 341 members?
This was more of a policy or administrative decision with previous administrations. Like, for example, under Governor Wolf, the priority is to replenish our ranks. For example, the past three fiscal years, we had anywhere from 3 to 4 cadet classes of approximately 120 cadets. So we're doing everything in our power because this is a priority by Governor Wolf and also our acting commissioner, Colonel Zanchak, to ensure that we replenish our ranks. As far as numbers are concerned, in 2018, we had over 11,000 applicants pursuing to become a Pennsylvania State Trooper. But going through the hiring process with the written exam, oral exam, the background investigation, PT assessment, medical and psych evaluations, we have a 3.5% success rate of that 11,000 people that initially applied to become a Pennsylvania State Trooper.
3.5%.
Yes, very extensive hiring process. It's typically, like I said, 11,000 people apply. They go through the written test, the oral board, and typically the top 400, top 500 moves forward to the next phases of the hiring process.
Who is a good recruit? When I say a good recruit, meaning potentially, someone out there listening, thinking right now, you know, that's I may have wanted to be a state trooper. Who's a good recruit? You know, obviously they have to be, you know, have some mental ability, be smart. Sounds like they have to have some physical skills as well, be in good shape. But what do you look for in recruits?
We don't look for any specific thing. We want people of all walks of life. We want people to reflect the Commonwealth. Like I said, the biggest things we're pursuing is diversity in our agency. For example, in the Commonwealth right now, 75% of the Commonwealth are Caucasian. We would prefer to have in our agency some diversity to reflect those numbers as far as with our applicants and also with our complement. And we don't try to turn anyone away as far as pursuing a state police, whether you're a criminal justice major. You don't have to be that. You can be a biology major. You can be an accountant. You can have experience as being a vet. We have all walks of life pursuing avenues of becoming a Pennsylvania State Trooper. And also when they get on our job, people that's currently on a job, they come from all diverse backgrounds. So we don't look for one specific thing. We prefer if people were law-abiding citizens, of course, to actually get through the hiring process. But we don't actually look for one specific thing as far as becoming a Pennsylvania State Trooper.
You know, and I'm not going to address this issue on this show because it's not what we're talking about, but there's been a lot of talk lately about state police being asked to cover a lot of municipalities across the Commonwealth that do not have their own local police departments. I think in many people's minds, one of the questions, I'll ask our other guest this question as well, is public safety in jeopardy in some areas because of the shortage of police officers?
That's a question I will allow the legislators to address that. You know, unfortunately, we do what we're told in the Pennsylvania State Police. That's something as far as providing coverage to certain municipalities that don't have coverage, their own department. That's something we allow the legislators to make that decision as far as how we will respond to that. So that's out of our hands.
Just out of curiosity, Lieutenant, what does a cadet make? What kind of income do they make when they start on the job?
Okay. For example, after a cadet graduates from the Pennsylvania State Police Academy, you have a starting salary of $61,000. One thing I'd like to touch on, after you graduate, you have free health care, very rewarding retirement. For example, you can work 20 years and get 50% of your highest year earnings, or work 25 years and get 75% of your highest year earnings and have lifetime benefits. Another opportunity we have in our department, we have over 11 organizational segments of our department, which encompasses over 150 specialized position categories. That's one of the selling points that we have in our department, is that you can work a career within a career when you work for the Pennsylvania State Police. When I say that, people automatically assume that when you become a Pennsylvania State Trooper, that you graduate from the academy, go out to the road, and you're working the turnpike, you're working the highways. That's all you're doing your whole career. Some people pursue that avenue, which is good for them, but in the state police, there's so much opportunity. I've been with this Pennsylvania State Police for approximately 12 years now, and I've worked in six different capacities, from being a patrol trooper to being a criminal investigator, being a patrol supervisor, working in Bureau of Integrity and Professional Standards in an auditing unit, also working with the policy and legislative affairs, and currently with the recruitment services section. So we have a lot of opportunities within our department. So that's one of the key selling points that we have for people interested in the Pennsylvania State Police.
Lieutenant Robert Bailey is with the recruitment services section of the Pennsylvania State Police. Lieutenant Bailey, thank you very much for being with us today.
No problem.
Thank you. I want to turn back to our guest here in the studio, Detective Sergeant Lisa Layden. By the way, Detective Sergeant Layden, you are a trailblazer. You are a pioneer. You were the first woman. In fact, I have someone here, maybe someone you know, who says thank you for your service and thank you for being her story maker and a trailblazer as a female police officer. You were the first female police officer in York County?
No, it was actually North Codorus Township, which is now part of Southwestern Regional Police Department.
Okay. So you've been with the Southwestern for how long now?
A little over 23 years.
23 years. I mean, you were the first woman.
Yep, in North Codorus Township I was.
Why did you want to become a police officer?
I think
it shouldn't take you that long to think about it, you know?
Changed over the years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's changed over the years. The number one reason that young people still say they want to be a police officer, but it is to help people. You know, I wanted to be of service and I wanted to do something more meaningful with my life, and I felt that was something to pursue.
As a woman, what challenges did you face?
I will say when I first came on the job, it was the late 90s. Overall, my policing experience has been extremely positive, and I've had a lot of opportunity. In the beginning, there was definitely some resistance and negative attitudes. With that said, you know, that came from some of the most senior people in policing. As far as the men that I worked alongside of since I came on the job, it's been overall a very positive experience. And I think that's getting better. Now I'm one of the oldest people in the department, and, you know, everyone's much younger, but they come, they have wives that are career women, and a lot of them come from a family where their mom was, you know, in a career. So I think that's getting better and better. Like I said, for me, it's been overall a positive experience. We have three women that work in my current department, Southwestern Regional, and for a 14-man department, that's really good.
Why would a woman, as we're talking about recruiting efforts, why would a woman become a police officer?
I think for overall the same reasons that men do. I do think women have a little more tendencies to have altruistic values. I guess one of the things that I think maybe doesn't draw women into the profession is that we have historically defined policing as a masculine profession, and we emphasize the competitiveness, the aggressiveness, kind of the emotional detachment, the distant thing. And I think that that kind of image of policing does not appeal to young women as much as it does to young men, and maybe even, you know, the type of people. Like, who do we want to hire? You know, again, we have to go back to that image, and who does it appeal to?
You said earlier that we have to, that community policing is, it's what many police departments are trying to do today, but it is what we should be doing in the future. The past has been, and you just kind of described this, that you had to be a tough guy to be a cop. And with community policing, and maybe that's what kind of discourages a lot of people too, is that, you know, I'm okay, I was an athlete in school, you know, I can handle myself, but, you know, I don't want to deal with what you had described earlier, the violence that a police officer has to deal with on occasion. Is that today's police officer?
You mean
as being the tough guy that you know? I know that we you know, you mentioned hiring people that are former military, but is that something that discourages women or discourages young people overall? Is that they have this vision in their mind of this image in their mind of what a police officer is?
Well, I think it's changed a lot over the last 24 years that I've been on the job. I see more of a focus towards community policing, you know, types of approaches. But I think
what overall, is community policing, by the way?
Well, it's based on not control, but based more on building relationships as a way to deter crime. You know, being engaged with the community in a non-arrest situation. And those things are important. And you know, if you read current research from the last 10 years, it is productive. It actually does build trust between the police and the community, and, you know, it can deter crime.
When done right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, Chief Moody, let me turn to you. The city of Harrisburg has a large minority population. How many black or Latino officers, Asian officers do you have, minority officers do you have amongst the Harrisburg Police Department?
Our diversity, we do have some diversity, obviously. Not as much as we would like, but that's the challenge for every police department everywhere. We all have the same goal, and what the lieutenant from PSP was referring to, you know, that pot is only so big, and we're all going for the same pot, every police department everywhere. For us, we have a pretty fair breakdown. When I say there is some representation, we have from a minority standpoint, I was just doing some numbers real quick. We have about 19 from the male side, 13 black males and about 6 Latino males. From a female side, we have about, I think we have 2 female Latino officers or of Spanish descent, and we have 1 black female biracial female.
How many women do you have overall?
Female, we have, I think we have 18 female police officers. So we do have a good complement compared to some of the other departments. And that was one of the things that we see when we do we do internships, unpaid, obviously, internships. And that's what attracts when we go to the colleges, when they can come to our department and say it's a female intern and she wants to ride with a female officer. We do have the ability because our female officers are spread throughout the department. So they're not all lumped up in like uniform patrol. They're equally spread, whether it's the detective division, whether it's our technical services division or our uniform patrol division. We have a good spread across. So as a young female coming in or a female of age to work, it's a good reflection because they can actually get in and talk to our females that are currently working and say, you know, hey, what are you seeing and what should I expect? And we are able to provide that aspect of it. So we're always trying to hire more because there is a place for female. My commissioner, my boss, our agency, we do believe there is absolute place for females in the profession, but it's a hard profession.
And I think the answer to this is kind of obvious, but I'd like you to talk about it. Why is it important that all police departments recruit more minority officers?
Well, we keep tossing this word around about being the diversity. And I think a big piece with our youth now and the way our culture is now, it's not as locked as it once was when we were younger growing up, where people just kind of just stayed within their own. They kind of did their – stayed culturally locked in.
You're talking about segregation.
Yeah, and we broke through that. And to really understand that, how do we best serve the citizens that we work for, you have to bring them in to really understand it because there are things that you can miss, that you could do wrong. We're fortunate to touch in we do have some Asians that work for our agency that although it's not what you would think that it would unlock doors and it would attract more people of Asian descent to come into it, I do see more at the consortium that we belong to. So Dauphin County also does consortium hiring. So it's all of the departments for one pool. And I've seen a little more, and I try to count because I'm a part of that, who shows up and who's there. But again, that extensive background and that the pieces to get you there, we tend to lose a lot of people. In 2018, we had about 274 people for the entire county that applied. Now, that's just applied. That doesn't mean that they made it through. Whereas in 2014, we had 333 people. So, you know, our numbers shift a little bit. In 16, we saw a little bit of a spike, but it's been kind of, you know, slowly decreasing and going away. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with just the millennials. You know, they process differently. You know, I'm a little older. I've been in this profession for going on 27 years now. And how I look at it and how I process sometimes is a little different than how our younger officers come in. You know, we were more, when I got hired, it was career-based. I'm going to do 30 years there. I'm going to do a lifetime there. They're going to have to drag me out of that place. And now, you know, millennials come in, and not to blame them, but they're like, hey, I'm going to do 20 years, but I'm just not going to do it here. I'll do 10 here. I'll do 5 over
there. You're talking about lateral changes.
Yeah, they want to move around.
With your city in particular and all urban districts or urban police forces tend to have this issue where there will be officers who will start in your department mm-hmm. but move to a suburban or another district. Maybe they can make more money. Maybe they won't have to do with some of the issues that they do in the city, right?
Policing, urban policing as opposed to suburban policing, there is a difference. And for those that say that there isn't, there is. It's a different. The framework is the same, but how you go about it is differently. It's just there's no way around it. We're a very busy department. And for some people, that's great to start with. But at some point, you know, you start factoring in like shift work. Well, we have permanents right now, so you're pretty much locked in for the year for your shift. But you know, if I have a family, when I come in and I start and I don't have a family, I can do all of that. But then as my needs change, is my department able to address my needs? And we do lose. We lose people for pay. We lose them for medical reasons. And sometimes we just lose them because they come in, work there, and they say, you know what? I thought I was ready for the city, but I wasn't. I need a little slower start. I need to go somewhere start somewhere slower that I can ease my way into it. Because one of the things that I think for policing, the best police officer, the one thing that you would need the most is just have common sense. If you have common sense, you'll be a great police officer.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about the shortage of police officers across the country, what's being done to recruit more, especially minority and women police officers. Our guest today, Detective Sergeant Lisa Layden of the Southwestern Regional Police Department in York County, Deputy Chief Derek Moody of the Harrisburg City Bureau of Police. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's go to Paul in Harrisburg. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to say thank you guys for your service. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And secondly, as far as the shortage goes, I think some of that has to do with how tough the job really is. I have a criminal justice background, and I do heating and air conditioning because you see the stuff on the news about these guys making split-second decisions that can change somebody's life, and nothing's ever, you know, exactly the way it should be. And if a bad call's made, next thing you know, these guys are being arrested or off the force, or even worse sometimes, somebody's life gets taken. I think that's probably some of the reasons why your numbers are down.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. We kind of addressed this, but those split-second decisions that he's talking about, you know, Chief Moody, when you say that common sense, how do you know when you're doing background on a candidate that they're able to make the right decision in those split seconds?
Well, you know, one of the things that we do in our background piece and the last piece of it before we give anyone a conditional offer of employment, we have an oral interview. And we spend a lot of time in that oral interview. I mean, for some candidates, it could take up to 2 hours of that just peeling it. We like to say we peel them back a little bit. We go all the way back to when they were in high school, decisions made. And how thorough your background is kind of what leads you to framework. But a lot of guys, we've been doing this for quite a while. So you can kind of get a feel of a person on a paper, but it's very important to follow up and actually talk to them, see how they articulate through life experience. And that's the thing. We look for life experience. Another category for a good police officer, life experiences. We're hiring officers now that are 21, 22 years old. I was 22 when I got hired. I can tell you, the only thing fortunate for me is I went into the Marine Corps right out of high school. So I had a little bit of structure. My family was police officers. I knew what I was getting into, or at least I thought I knew what I was getting into. But the officer I am today is not the officer I was when I started. I learned this is one profession where you grow into the profession, and it takes time. It takes a lot of time. But if you have those basic elements, you can grow. And it's hard. Paul talked about that split second decision. There's not a lot of professions out there that you have a fraction of a second to make a life-altering decision. and your life-altering decision can put you in jail if you get it wrong, or it could harm other people. So there's a heavy, heavy weight on that and the scrutiny that comes with that now. So it's difficult.
Sergeant Layden, what's the most difficult part of the job? What have you learned over the past 20 years of your career?
Well, I think what we're talking about, you know, those split-second decisions and how they're looked at, you know, you can't paint all that with a broad brush, you know, and I think that's the problem, you know, acknowledging that there's some things, there's some bad apples, or there's some, you know, mistakes, or there's things that happen, but you can't categorize everything the same as that. There are aspects of policing that are not pretty. You know, and I think we're going back to why don't people want to do this job. Again, I think the accurate picture is good. You know, when you're talking to high school kids, you're talking to criminal justice students, is, you know, what do you really spend the majority of your time doing? You know, and looking at things like that and being able to tease those things out instead of making the whole thing, you know, look like it's all violence and it's all, you know, public scrutiny and terribleness, because it's not. That's actually a very
small... Do you like going to work every day?
I love going to work every day, yes.
What do you look forward to?
My fellow officers. They're like a family to me. And, you know, what I've done, I've, in my position, be an investigator. I love doing that. I've been our primary child abuse investigator for 21 years, and... that is one of the most difficult experiences of my career, but it's also one of the most rewarding.
What can women police officers do that men can't, if anything?
I don't think that there's anything they can do that men can't. And again, I think
maybe that's the wrong question.
Okay.
I mean,
that's how they do it.
Yeah, right.
I
understand, like, for example, women that may have been accused of a crime of breaking the law, or maybe in a domestic violence situation or a child abuse situation, that there are people who are much more comfortable, and even men, who are much more comfortable talking to a female officer than a male officer.
Well, yeah, you're talking about communication skills, and I think you're seeing that in police recruiting strategies that are cutting edge. They're starting to look at communication skills as an extremely important part. And if you look at, again, you know, going back to the more recent research, females tend to have better communication skills, and that's probably cultural. But what you see is a direct correlation with lower levels of use of force, lower levels of coercion, lower levels of aggressive tactics. And, you know, that's, I think, a good thing. So I think we're going to definitely see more of a focus on that. But again, you know, it goes back to what are you looking for? Who are you looking to hire? And I think we're going to see a shift away from still maintaining the current standards that you would have to become a police officer, but looking more for what Chief Moody was talking about, communication skills, personality. You know, he's talking about common sense, but I think those things all fit together.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a phone call from Tom in Shrewsbury. Tom, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Can you guys hear me okay?
We sure can.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for the show, and I love the conversation. I grew up outside of New York City, and I moved to Baltimore for college. I live in Southern New York County now. I find that millennials, as Chief Moody mentioned, are influenced easily by the president. Back in the 90s, I remember Bill Clinton tried to hire 100,000 police to help with the war on drugs. And then in 2000, we saw the war on terror. I think it shifted some of the emphasis of our national policy away from policing towards terrorism, but then that left police recruitment in the dust. And then under Obama, we saw Eric Holder go after cops in a way we've never seen before. What does your panel think about how politics at the national level affects recruitment across the country?
Tom, thank you very much for your call. Chief Moody, I don't know if that's something you want to weigh in on or not.
No, I think Tom has a valid point where he's hitting in on, and it can't be overlooked. If you look at any hierarchy of how things are done, it starts at the top and it kind of works its way down. So if that's the scheme that we're working with, if it's starting up at that highest level and trickling its way down, that's where the focus is. And it's easy to lose focus on these issues when they're created for other reasons. It may not be necessarily the police or the community's aspect, but it's how it's perceived at the highest level. And that could be influenced by a person who's either for or against policing in general, depending on their experience with it. But one of the things that I did want to kind of key in on that and talk about is some of the requirements of the policing now. And I think Tom touched on it a little bit when he said, you know, focus has changed. Some of the things for policing now that have now kicked in is that the job isn't just as plain and simple as it used to be. It used to be catch the bad guy and protect people, period. And it was pretty general, but it was an easier task. Now, requirements now, you have to know how to triage people on the street. You have to be a surgeon, a street surgeon. You know, you have to be a psychologist. You have to be all of these different hats that come in now. And depending on what the theme is for that particular administration or that year or that department or whatever, whoever's influencing it, kind of weighs in and can shift us away from our common mission, which was do good, protect people, and catch the bad guy.
Training obviously has changed. We had a question here from a listener who asked, with the number of police shootings across the country, has that changed your training? And I don't, let me follow up with that and ask, I mean, we've talked many times in our program about the number of people who have gone to prison, gone to jail, who are suffering from a mental illness. Is that something that today's police officer is trained to recognize and deal with?
And that's the point I'm getting at. You know, the level of training that is required to make a very good assessment of a person, you figure our mission is spread across. We have 22 different hats we could wear at any different day, depending on who we're dealing with and what situation we're dealing with. By the time policing season, by the time they get to our level, they failed at all the other levels. It's failed with the psychologist. It's failed with the psychiatrist. It's failed all of these different levels. And I think the perception of the people is that, well, the police should be able to, they should be able to do that. If we just trained in just dealing with mental illnesses, I'd say absolutely yes. But there's not enough time in a day. There's not enough days in a year. There's not enough years, you know, to put us at that level where we would be able to get it right every time. Even the professionals don't get it right every time. But it makes it very difficult when a family comes in, and let's say it's a shooting, and the person that was shot had a mental health issue, and the public's perception is that, well, the police officer should have recognized it. They should have known. They should have been able to see that in 2 seconds. Clearly, we watched it through the media, and we were able to, you know, to derive at that. But it's an unfair process. It's in the sense that the expectation, and we talk in our agency about managing perceptions, mm-hmm. or managing the that type of stuff.
We only have a couple minutes left. So many other questions I have, but one in particular that I have for you, Chief Moody, we know that a lot of African Americans, especially young African American men, have had bad experiences with police officers. Mm-hmm. Does that make it even more difficult to recruit African Americans into police departments?
Absolutely. Everyone knows someone, and it's the spin that can be put on to that interaction with the officer. Although the officer may have intended to do well or may have intended this, the outcome could have been different. And I just recently dealt with one where we had an altercation where an officer, we were dealing with looking for some suspects that had robbed somebody. Well, in doing that, the officer stopped people in the area. They got into a residential area, they tucked themselves in, and we didn't know who they were. We just knew we were looking for a clothing description. One of the people stopped ended up being a very young child, and it dramatically affected the child, his interaction with the officer. The officer was doing what he was supposed to be doing, but it affected him. The mother had the foresight to reach out to us to talk about that impact on her young African-American child, and we were able to bring the officer back in with the child, sit down, and work it through. And I think we fixed the problem that if that was ignored, that could have festered into something much, much larger.
We're out of time for today's program. I want to thank both of you for being on the show today. I mean, this is an issue that I asked Lieutenant Bailey about this, and if I could just get a quick answer from you since we only have about 30 seconds. Is public safety in jeopardy in some places because of the shortage of police officers?
I think it could be.
Could be.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say personally where I live, I like to see the presence of my local police, and I like to know that they would most likely be there quickly if I need them.
Detective Sergeant Lisa Layden, a pioneer in York County, Southwestern Regional Police Department in York County, and Deputy Chief Derek Moody of the Harrisburg City Bureau of Police. Thank both of you for being with us today.
Thanks, Scott.
Coming up on tomorrow's show, we're going to be talking about the outdoors a little bit, land and water conservation. That's part of our conversation coming up on tomorrow's program, so be sure to tune in. I'm Scott Lamar.